This is Rob Pincus, and welcome to the Rob Pincus Podcast.
The Rob Pincus Podcast is brought to you by the Personal Defense Network. The Personal Defense Network is the leading destination of high-quality online personal defense video content and a no-nonsense gathering place for those serious about arming themselves for defense in every aspect of their lives. To learn more, visit www.personaldefensenetwork.com. Now, here's Rob.
Welcome to this episode of the Rob Pincus Podcast. I'm Rob Pincus, and today we're going to do things a little bit differently. Now, of course, this is a relatively new podcast, but our general format is to do a segment on politics or gun rights and a segment on training. And we're still pretty much going to do that today, but it's going to be a little different because after the training segment, we are going to go directly to a Gun Makers Match event that was held in Littleton, Colorado, just outside of Denver, where unserialized firearms have been banned at Triple J Armory. And this was an educational day, and you're going to hear from some of the people that participated in that event in that segment. But first, let me talk to you about Personal Defense Network. Personal Defense Network has been around since 2005 as the premier destination, the premier resource you have for distance education, online information, educational videos, and articles related to armed defense, all sorts of self-defense, and personal security. It's the place to go for information on being better prepared to take care of yourself or those that you care about in an emergency. And honestly, just about any time. We have some health information in there. Again, general security for the home information in there. And then training concepts, as well as all the techniques, skills, product reviews, things like that related to being better prepared. You know, we started as a training DVD series. I mean, it was an hour-long DVD and it might have 6, 8, 10, maybe as many as 12 short chapters, and it would cover a variety of topics. We produced over 100 DVDs over the course of about 12 to 15 years. But in 2010, we started producing content specifically for our online destination, personaldefensenetwork.com. And I'm really proud of the collection of information that we have there after this podcast. Go check it out. There's a lot of it available for free. About 40% of the information at the site is available completely for free. And if you want, you can upgrade to a higher level of membership and get behind that paywall and see some other information provided by a team of instructors. Of course, it's not just me. Today in our training segment brought to you by Personal Defense Network, I want to talk to you about the difference between training and practice. You know, if you do head over to Personal Defense Network, or if you read an article about training, if you read a product review even and learn something new about a piece of equipment, you know, that's educational. If you go to a class, take a course, certainly you're going to be exposed to new concepts, new ideas, new techniques. You're going to be coached through those techniques. You're going to get to develop some level of an ability to perform those techniques, hopefully, if you're under good instruction, good education, good tutelage, and you're really going to learn and pick up something new if it was of value. And all of those things are training. So whether you're reading a book, you're watching a video, or you're participating in a class, you are learning new skills or concepts, and that's how we define training. Practice is something entirely different. And quite frankly, it's the hard work. The practice is where you develop or at least maintain your abilities and your ability to apply those skills. And of course, rereading a book or thinking about a concept or thinking about how a certain concept applies to a drill or product choice or some tactical issue that you have to face, that's practice as well. So the difference between training and practice is important to acknowledge. But I think one of the most important aspects of realizing there's a difference is reinforcing your dedication to practice, because practice is the hard work. And when you learn something new or you develop a new skill, pick up a new product that you're going to put into place, you know, so whether it's staged or, you know, a new alarm or something like that at your house, a safe, obviously a new gun, new sights for your gun, new holster, anything you might think of as something that's going to help you be better prepared to defend yourself, those things are cool, right? You complete a class, you get the certificate, you get to tell people about it. Maybe there was a qualification course or some drill at the end to signify that when you passed that test, you graduated successfully from the course. Of course, you complete a book, you want to tell your friends what you thought about it. If it was a valuable book or a good book, you might recommend it, put it on your recommended reading list if you have such a thing. You might just put it on a shelf in your house and add it to the collection of things you've read and the knowledge that you've amassed over the years. And completing training, completing a class, completing course, completing even just watching a simple educational video, those are accomplishments. And those are sometimes challenges as well that we have to overcome. But practice is really just the work. After you've learned something new, going to the range, for example, with your gun and putting in the time to really make sure that you own those skills, that's not as easy. It's not as much fun. And it's often something you're going to end up doing alone, not in the group that you took the class with, you know, with friends or peers or new friends, or maybe just someone who challenged you to perform at a higher level, whether it was the instructor or another classmate or some other coach. You know, I'm talking a lot about firearms classes and firearm skills, because that, of course, that's my specialty. But the same thing goes for your unarmed defensive skills or your medical emergency skills, you know, applying a tourniquet or something like that. You learn how to do it. But if you don't practice it, you know, if you don't even practice the mundane things of accessing that tourniquet, whether it's something you carry on your body, like I do on a medical kit, an ankle kit most of the time, or in a bag, or it's something you just have in the drawer above the refrigerator in your house, you know, thinking about what if something happened right now, how quickly could I get that tourniquet? And then how quickly could I apply it to myself, to an arm, to a leg, to one of my family members, to an arm, to a leg? Could I apply it if I was injured in one of my arms, apply it one-handed? You know, thinking about all those kinds of things, that's the hard work and practicing that. I tell all of our students when they come through my classes, the shooting classes, hey, listen, there's nothing that you're going to own at the end of the day today that's new. If it's a new physical skill, you're not going to own it at the end of a one-day class, two-day class, I don't know how many days it is. You're not going to own it at the end of the class. Remember, you know, even if it's something you learn in the morning, you know, you've only got a handful of hours to practice it, and you're probably going to be learning a lot if that one-day class was worth attending. And if you are exposed to a new technique at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and the class ends at five, well, obviously you've had very little repetition. And that's what it takes to own a physical skill. It takes repetition over time. And that's the practice. And even developing the ability to recognize the right decision to make, or recognize a stimulus, a prompt that you need to do something, you know, a tactical issue that comes up, you know, being aware of someone potentially being a threat to your environment, in your environment, recognizing that something dangerous is about to happen. All of these things take repetition over time. And whether it's through visualization, role-playing, drills, dry fire manipulation practice, again, accessing your gun from a quick access safe, accessing other emergency equipment from wherever you stage it, these are things that must be done repeatedly over time. And that's the hard part. That's the work. So I want you to think about that from now on. When you go to a class, don't just think about, you know, how much ammo do I need for the class, or, you know, how many days off of work do I need for the class, or how much does a class cost? I also want you to start thinking about how much time, effort, energy, money is it going to cost you to practice the skills to reinforce the information that you learn over time after the course, or after you read the book, or after you watch the training DVD, after you take the distance education course. You know, these things are at least as important. Quite honestly, I think a lot of people, you know, they go to classes for the fun of it, because it is fun. You know, they go to the class because it makes them feel good about themselves. They feel like they've accomplished something. They can tell their friends about it. They can be proud. They may go to a class a year. You know, my question is always, well, how much time are you spending practicing during that year? You know, quite often we have classes that are prerequisites, right? So the idea is, okay, you take a fundamental defensive shooting class, our intuitive defensive shooting class, you take that one-day course, and then you can come back and take our advanced pistol handling course or the unorthodox shooting position course. But the idea is you can now take that course safely, and it will be of value to you because you have, at some level, developed a high level of skill, or at least a good solid foundation of skill from that basic class, from that first level prerequisite class. If you take the class and then, you know, you go 2 years, you save up some money, you get the vacation time, whatever it is, you come back and you want to take the advanced class, but you haven't practiced, you haven't at least maintained the skills as you had them at the end of that first day, then you're really starting from zero. And I do end up reteaching a lot of the fundamentals, at least at a reminder level, to many, many students who come through classes. You know, my concern is that the vast majority of students only go to one class. So whether you take a class with me on a certain topic, whether it's handgun, rifle, the grappling, a striking class, you take a course with someone else, one of our other PDN contributors maybe, if you only take that 1 or 2 days of training with us and you never practice your skills, yes, you're better off, but you're not nearly as well off as you could be for the work. You got to do the work. So keep that in mind. There is a big difference between training and practice, and you got to do the practice, or the training won't be nearly as valuable as it could be for you. So that ends our training segment today, and I'm going to slip right into talking a little bit about this podcast. Of course, you're listening to it. I hope you're subscribed to it. You can probably subscribe to it right now while you're listening to it. You might even be able to share it right now while you're listening to it. You know, think of somebody who needs to hear that message about the difference between training and practice, get that reminder to go out and do that hard work of practicing. And certainly maybe it's someone you can say, hey, take a listen to this and then come to the range and practice with me. That might be a good idea. Or somebody who's interested maybe in the politics and the gun rights stuff, or somebody who's really into the training and the practice and the gear, but they aren't as into the politics, and you want them to hear some of the information we're putting out here at the podcast. You know, sharing, it's a big, big part, obviously, of helping us grow and keeping this podcast alive, but also it's part of you expanding your network of people who are like-minded and people who are dedicated to not only defending our Second Amendment, but also defending themselves and those that they care about. So the training segment, as I said, was brought to you by Personal Defense Network, and now this political segment is brought to you by Second Amendment Organization. Second Amendment Organization is founded in the idea of grassroots advocacy. So the idea is, how many people can we let know that we are proud and responsible gun owners and be available to talk to them about what responsible gun ownership is, why it's important, and why our Second Amendment rights should be defended. Head on over to 2AO.org and learn more about how you can be a better grassroots advocate after this podcast. So we have done several Gun Makers Match events. We're about to have the second annual national event down in Florida, where we're going to have about 200 people there. And we'll have a bunch of people competing in a lot of different formats. We're going to have rifle, pistol caliber, carbine, and pistol divisions in both printed and kit-built guns. But one of the things we've been doing in addition to those competitions is we have been going around the country doing educational days. And this is in coalition not only with, obviously, Guns for Everyone National, who puts on the Gun Makers Match, but also Firearms Policy Coalition, FPC. Okay, if you follow FPC, you're going to learn a lot about what's going on in the courts. That's where they do most of their work, but they are very interested in the educational aspects of advocacy as well. And they're supporting us in this process of teaching people how to get involved with let's say, a safety net of people who are very experienced in gun making, getting involved in private gun making. So we've done events. We did one previous one in Colorado. We've done one in Massachusetts that I've done personally. There's been one other one that happened in Massachusetts recently, supported by Matt Holmes of 2A 3D Print, hosted by Patriot Firearms Training. And we also did one in Pennsylvania at the Oaks Gun Show, the big holiday gun show that took place right before Christmas. And these events have all been a lot of fun. They've been very successful. And it has a very diverse group of people participating, some of whom are very experienced in gun making, some of whom are building their first guns. And of course, that's really the target audience. It's people who've never built guns before. And what I did at this event that we had at Triple J Armory in Littleton, Colorado, I recorded some interviews, just some real quick, you know, hey, what have you done before with gun making? Is this your first gun? Why are you doing it? What do you think is cool about it? And I wanted to share that with you because, again, I think, you know, that's the best form of advocacy, really, is hey, I'm a responsible gun owner. I exercise my gun rights responsibly. Here's the kinds of things I do, and here's why I do them. So this time on the Rob Pincus podcast, you're going to hear from a whole bunch of people. And this is probably the most people we will have speak on a podcast episode so far. So let me know what you think. I think that some really interesting ideas and thoughts came out of this group of people that were willing to talk to me about their experience at the Gun Makers Match Private Gun Making Educational Day just outside of Denver, Colorado, where private gun making is now illegal. But in Littleton, Colorado, at Triple J Armory, it's not only legal, it's also encouraged. All right, today in the Politics Gun Rights segment, I'm going to talk to a friend of mine, Edgar Antiol. And I probably didn't say that right, but he'll do it really cool in a second. He is the founder, one of the co-founders, I guess, of Guns for Everyone and Guns for Everyone National. And I've worked with Guns for Everyone and admired their work for a long time. You know, they offer free training to really anyone who wants to show up. But they have, he'll tell us how many, tens of thousands of students have gone through their programs. And now with Guns for Everyone National, a nonprofit, we are also working together on the Gun Makers Match, and I'm promoting private gun making. So we'll talk about that in a second. Right now, I'm going to talk about Second Amendment Organization. I am the Executive Vice President of Second Amendment Organization, and they are the sponsors of the Politics Gun Rights segment here on the Rob Pincus Podcast. Remember, Second Amendment Organization is all about your grassroots advocacy, making you a better, more educated, more articulate, and maybe even more passionate grassroots advocate. Check out the information at 2AO.org. You can learn a lot at the blog, and also you can learn the talking points or maybe the pitfalls of talking about gun rights and gun laws at gunrights.info. That is Second Amendment Organization. So now I'm joined by
Edgar Antillon.
I told you he'd say it cooler. All right, Edgar, tell everybody what you do, what you've been doing.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, I'm the founder of, or co-founder of Guns for Everyone, Guns for Everyone National, organization that on the local level here in Colorado has provided free concealed carry classes kind of as a protest to the whole process. Right now, we're nearing 100,000 students. Ever since we started back in 2010 and still growing strong. And now we're moving to the Guns for Everyone National, which is the national organization where we're focusing on the national training and also the competitions with along with you and the people over at Aussie, just trying to promote the private gun making hobby and ensuring that that doesn't go away and that we can are able to continue that practice. And my kids get to do it. My grandkids get to do it.
So. I was going
to
say, because your son already does it. He's competing in a couple of these gun makers matches. We're going to get to that. Cause I think that's kind of the more fun part. Let's go back here a second. Cause I want you to talk about this. I think you and I get frustrated by a whole bunch of things inside the gun community. But also, the politics side of it, we get frustrated with things that happen outside of the gun community. You said you're approaching 100,000 students. You offer free CCW training. One would think that that would be celebrated, right? And maybe even by both sides of the gun rights argument. Oh, okay. He's providing training to absolutely anybody. He's not profiteering. It's not an opportunistic thing. He's making it easy for people to get training. And then, of course, inside the gun community, we want more people to be trained. We want more people to have concealed carry permits. When you put people on the spot and you ask them, do you think there should be a fee to exercise your Second Amendment rights? 100%, right? Usually they're going to say no, at least to the people that are active in the gun community working to teach people. Has that been your experience that everybody's super thrilled that you're doing free training?
No, unfortunately not. And unfortunately, a lot of the resistance has been from within the community or quote unquote community, whatever that means. So, no, it hasn't been easy. And a lot of it is that they think it is an opportunistic thing and that we're just providing free classes so we can take business away. And that's just not it. In fact, anybody who's tried to do free anything understands that. It's tough. Like even providing stuff for free, it's not necessarily easy.
Right. So there's all the human behavior stuff. Like, well, if it's free, it's no good. There's no values in that. But let's go ahead. Let's dive a little bit deeper into this idea that the would-be competition, right? Other instructors have tried to cut you guys down or hold you guys back because you're sort of eating into their profit margin on CCW classes.
Yeah. Well, and that's unfortunate because we've worked with other instructors. Because what we want to provide is that activism side of it, the protest side of it. We should not have to pay for our rights to carry a firearm for self-defense, for self-preservation. And a lot of instructors do see that as a competition. I think they're just limiting themselves as opposed to other instructors. One prime example, I'm just going to plug him, is Kenneth's Robert Butler. Has instead embraced it and said, you know what, what you don't do, I'm going to do. Because, and that's the play and that should be the move because there's a lot of stuff that we don't have time for. Even if we did want to provide further training, they have more time for it and we can collaborate. So it's unfortunate that a lot of these instructors have failed at their business and that's really all it has been. So they want to blame us for this stuff, but it's a movement. It's an activism thing. They should see it for what it is and not a competition thing.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So now let's talk about outside. You, I don't know how much of this you can talk about or want to talk about, but you've been involved in some legal activity to make sure that your courses count, that people that take this training are able to actually get their permit with the certificates you issue.
Correct. And a lot of it was during the pandemic. So a lot of things changed. We contacted our attorney on how we were going to move with the pandemic. So we did what a lot of people were doing, and that's a hybrid thing, which is allowed by the state of Colorado. The state of Colorado actually a pretty unique state where it doesn't have a huge curriculum that you have to abide by. It's actually pretty small requirements that are there. Well, one of the sheriff's office decided that they were going to create their own requirements, which is not allowed by state law. Larimer County, we ended up suing them, and we're still going through that litigation. So there's no final decision on that just yet.
But they have changed their policy.
Correct.
Because of this lawsuit.
Correct. So once we sued them, they kind of did do the backtrack thing, and they say, yeah, we agree. We do accept this stuff, and that is correct. So we now accept it. But for us, it would have been easy to just drop it and just leave it there, but now we want an injunction. so that they don't do it again. Because what's to stop, if we end the lawsuit, what's to stop them from doing it in the future?
Sure. And they've got the tax money, and you would have to start that process over again.
All over
again. All right. So moving on to bigger and better things. Tell me about the beginning of Guns for Everyone National, and then how you end up being the sanctioning body for the Gun Makers match.
So Guns for Everyone National kind of started, to be honest with you, and this ruffles some feathers as well in the community, is the lack of good national training. There's a lot of organizations out there, one primarily, which I'll leave nameless, that provides national level instruction, almost has a monopoly on it, to be frank. And there's lacking. It's just not enough. It's not modern. It's not up to date. It just doesn't provide what it does. So it kind of started there. And then we, with our conversation with you about doing the private gun making match, we were getting into competitions anyways. And that's one area where we kind of struggle. Where are we going to move with this? So when the private gun making stuff, and the lack of competition for the people who make their own guns, it was a no-brainer at that point. It was just, there's a need for that.
So we're about a year into the Gun Makers Match project. We are sitting at Triple J Armory. We just ran our second handgun-only regional gun makers competition here. It was the third time we've done a regional match, because I ran one out at Cape Gunworks in Massachusetts. Yesterday, we did our second gun building educational day, which is obviously co-sponsored by Firearms Policy Coalition here. What's been kind of the highlight, or what are your big takeaways like a year into this project with multiple events having been run?
For me, the highlight has just been the overall switch of minds, because even within some of the people that we talked to at the beginning, a lot of the hesitation of going public and letting this be known in the mainstream, if you will, a lot of that perception has changed. Obviously, we haven't changed everybody's mind, but that's been awesome to see, is just how we've been able to prove to people that there is a benefit to being out in the mainstream and allowing the world to see that this is a normal hobby, just like wood making and just like boat making or whatever, basket weaving. It's really no different than that. It's a tradition, and it's something that we ought to continue. So that's been amazing to see. And the other thing that's been kind of intriguing is, even I think Haller just won a case in D.C. I don't want to speak out of turn, but if I'm not mistaken, he just won it. So the small victories that we're getting is also pretty nice to see. I'm actually pretty pessimistic usually when it comes to this stuff. I'm usually one that's saying contacting your local lawmaker isn't going to do anything. So it's been nice to see that switch in that wave and that airflow kind of go in our direction.
Yeah, if nothing else, we're creating a lot of content and a lot of buzz to refute the idea that the only people who are making guns are doing it solely to avoid government records of the fact that they have guns. Obviously, we're out in public doing this. The Heller situation in D.C., as I understand it, he did sue the city of D.C. over his inability to privately make a gun there. They had it banned. And my understanding is, much like New York did with that transportation issue to avoid having to go to the Supreme Court, and obviously like Larimer County tried to do with you, I believe that Washington, D.C. changed their rule without the court forcing them to, as I understand it. So I'm not sure if that case is still pending and going through the motions, or if they went ahead and dropped the case. But I know that victory was claimed, another great victory for Dick Heller against D.C., regaining lost rights. You know, that's what this is all about. And, you can pound the table and scream shall not be infringed all you want. At the end of the day, we are infringed, and concealed carry has taught us it's going to be an incremental regaining of the rights. What's next? What's next on the horizon? What are you working on that you can talk about, Guns for Everyone National?
So we want to focus on obviously the matches. We want to expand that as much as we possibly can. And then the other thing that we want to start doing is Guns for Everyone National instructors, which really we use USCCA Defensive Shooting Fundamentals curriculum, which is your curriculum, the ICE training curriculum, to certify these instructors and allow these instructors, basically subsidize a lot of the classes that they provide. That way the instructors still get paid. They don't lose any money. They don't stress about that. And then a student could enter a class for free if need be, because again, we want to push and promote responsible gun ownership.
Right. So you're and then obviously I know this, and I'm incredibly humbled by it. The idea that Guns for Everyone National is trusting the ICE curriculum. And I think it's a brilliant move. And I think USCCA should see that this is kind of part of what the service they provide. Your organization is simply saying to anybody out there, if you become certified through this other organization, we will honor that credential and we will fund people going through your classes. I mean, I think that's an incredibly brilliant nonprofit business move, because you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to come to a guy like me or sit down, you know, you and your co-founder, Isaac, and write up a curriculum when you do trust, and I appreciate that you trust the defensive shooting fundamentals.
And there's no need to reinvent it, right? Like, we're good at one particular thing. We proved it here in the state of Colorado that we're good at getting people into classes, and we did the free training, and people get excited about that. So we've developed that proof of concept here in the state of Colorado. And that's all we want to focus on, is get more people to go to classes and show up to classes. We don't want to create a curriculum. There's already a defensive shooting fundamentals are already a fantastic curriculum. No need to recreate it.
Awesome. And then where can people find you? And what about supporting Guns for Everyone National? How do people get involved in that?
GFENational.com. That's the website. On the local side, gunsforeveryone.com. On our Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, it's really the same, Guns for Everyone National or Guns for Everyone. You will find us there.
Awesome. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. We are here at Triple J Armory just outside of Denver, Colorado. We're technically in Littleton, which is probably a good thing, because unserialized firearms have just been banned recently, which is obviously creating all kinds of headaches and potential lawsuits in Denver proper. But you, Christian, are known as the other SIG on the internet. Yep. You work with the Aussie group. You design cool stuff and you 3D print it, and you do it in places where it's legal, which is most of the U.S. And today we're here at Triple J Armory to do a private gun building educational day event. So this is the second one we've done here. We're going to get kicked off here in a little while. We'll have people come in mostly around kit building. Obviously, it's kind of hard in a 3 to 4 hour event to 3D print a gun. But talk to us about you, your work, Aussie, and then what this cool stuff is.
Sure. So, like Rob said, I'm a Christian. I go by the other SIG, primarily on Twitter and on Matrix through the Aussie group. And I've been working with privately manufactured firearms for about the last 2.5 years. And that kind of spans a lot of stuff for me. So I started, this is a design myself. This is a Glock 43X. Or Glock 48, depending on what slide I choose to put on it in the morning, that I designed and worked from existing designs that were out there on the internet. Printed pistols are a pretty common thing in the printing scene.
So this is, none of this is stippling. This is all straight off the printer.
This
right?
is all,
so everybody gets it, which is kind of one of the advantages of the 3D printing for me, is you get to customize everything, the contour, the look, obviously pick the color.
Exactly. So this, let's hold up for the camera there, is designed to my hand.
Right.
The ergonomics are all set up for me. The finger grooves are the right spacing for me. The stippling is something that I like, but I can just print because I'm not too handy with a soldering iron. And like Rob said, that's a huge advantage of the 3D printing for me personally. And then after I stopped working on, you know, the pistols, got that done and down, I've moved on to a lot of 9mm PCCs. 9mm is really popular in the 3D printing space. It's easy to get. Barrels are available. Right. And the forces aren't too awful. So a lot of people can do it safely. And that's how we end up with totally unique designs like this. This is a King Cobra 9. Designed by Durwood, who's been doing the printing thing longer than pretty much anyone else. And it uses a unique delay system to deal with recoil. The 9mm recoil is not the worst thing in the world. It's a unique engineering.
And it is important to say, like, this is, I first saw this last year at the Gun Makers Match in June, and it just recently went public here at the end of January in 2022. These files are all now available, and the bolt, this, unlike a lot of previous designs and some of the things you see out there, there's really nothing manufactured here, right?
So this particular one uses an RP9 barrel.
Okay.
Because while we can make barrels, it's kind of a pain. Right. So we choose not to, because here in the U.S., we don't have to.
And this is a AR fire control group.
Yeah.
Okay, so the fire control group and the barrel are traditionally manufactured, but like everything else about this is Durwood's design.
Exactly.
Obviously, there's a lot of input. I know he would be the first to say there's a lot of people helping out to tweak it, but this guy, he's a genius. He's doing all kinds of cool stuff.
He's pretty smart. And particularly this one is an S variant. It's designed to take Suomi drums because everybody loves a drum mag. They're fun at all the parties, but it's specifically designed around this, which is a bit unwieldy, but it is a lot of fun. It looks cool.
A lot of 3D printing is about what looks cool, to be fair.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We saw that at the Gunmakers match.
And it also takes 3D printed magazines, which is a convenient thing because you can make magazines as long as you want. You can make magazines that look however you want. You could copy an MP5 magazine, or you could copy a UMP magazine if there's a specific artistic style you want, or just you think that looks cool.
And that's okay. Like a lot of people ask, well, why would you want to do that? You could just buy a Glock 43X or a Glock 48. Yeah, you're missing the point, right?
Yeah, no. A lot of people initially get into this to save money. They think, oh, well, I'll print a lower. It's cheaper to print something than buy a P80. You're not going to save money. It's a passion project. It's a hobby.
Freedom hobby.
It's a freedom hobby. It has wonderful benefits, but like at the end of the day, you're building something that you can be proud of.
All right. And I know you're proud of this. So let's talk about this.
So this right here is a current ongoing project at Aussie. You'll notice it's in some pieces. This is a copy of an FNP90.
Do it that way.
Perfect. So, as you may or may not know, the P90 is kind of an iconic pop culture icon. Mm-hmm. Stargate, anything that wants to look like
it. And to be fair, a lot of us that do 3D printing are kind of nerds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To be completely fair.
For sure. But at any sci-fi movie that wants to look futuristic, the P90 shows up. So there's obviously a lot of interest in that. But P90s are very expensive.
I'm just going to do this. Watch this. And now it's an adjustable comb.
There you go. Yeah.
So we'll work on the adjustable comb model.
We have customization.
It's happening now.
Huge benefit of 3D printing. But the P90 is a really expensive gun, especially here in the U.S. And if we can duplicate those aesthetics and duplicate the cartridge or duplicate the performance.
Right, because this does shoot a 5.7, right?
This shoots 5.7 out of P90 magazines, and the magazines are printable too, but I don't have one of those with me. But you can do it for $1,500 less.
Yeah, this one you might be able to save money once you're in it. Yeah,
you might
once
save a little
it,
money.
This one you might save a little money on it.
Not once you start shooting it, but
right,
still.
Right, right,
yeah.
Right.
But,
cool. Well, I appreciate you showing us I think you said this even before we started, like it's a little bit of a history lesson, right? Like, so we started, it starts with, and it's not just it's not just like community history. It really is how I think we all get into it, right?
Sure.
I started with just printing frames, and then I started with printing AR lowers. Then I tried to build a complete AR printed lower and printed upper and put all that together. And then I did an FGC9, right? Mm-hmm. And now someday I'll take on some kind of an original design, I'm sure. But man, I admire what you guys are doing. What you personally are doing as the other SIG on Matrix at the Aussie community and also on Twitter. Christian, thanks, man.
Pleasure.
All right, Joel, you are here with us at the gun building day. Is this your first P80 build?
This is actually going to be my second build. I built one probably about 4 or 5 months ago.
Okay.
I went with the Glock 19 style frame. I'm going full size this time. So
nice, so the 17 size. Yep. What do you like about the private gun making?
The ability to know how the gun works more than anything. You know, I think it... you buy a gun, it's all put together, and you clean it. You take the slide off, clean the barrel, you put it back together. You know, this, you know, lets you know how everything works. And because of my background in, like, engineering and trying to figure out how stuff works, it was intriguing to me, I guess.
So I think, to me, that's one of the things that makes you, like, potentially a better gun owner if you build a gun, right? It's one thing to strip it down, but it's a whole other thing, really, to start from something that can't fire bullets, and then you make it fire bullets, regardless whether it's an 80% 3D print, metal folding, whatever you're doing. And you've been a gun owner for a long time.
Yeah. Since I've been old enough to own a gun, and I grew up with guns, I was doing shooting sports when I was like 6 years old. So yeah, I've been around it my whole life and didn't know anything besides taking the slide off and cleaning my barrel, to be totally honest with you, you know. And I remember the first time I did a big breakdown on my Glock 19 or my 1911. And that's like kind of like sparked my interest of like, oh, it's good to know how this works, you know. And then why does a stove pipe all the time? Oh, because I need to polish my stuff, you know. And it was like kind of the eye opener. And you really get your hands on when you're building your own gun. You find out why it doesn't work and what component is wrong, and whether it's you or it's because you choose something that you might need a heavier spring because of something you chose.
Cool, man. Thanks for sharing your insight.
Absolutely.
My name is Aaron Werner. I came down because of a friend of mine told me we were building some guns today, so I'm building my first P80.
All right, and what is exciting for you? Now, you obviously are doing product development. You understand manufacturing and building to some extent in your professional life. What's exciting for you about building your own gun?
I'd say more full understanding of how it's going to function. Like maintenance to most guns is not a full disassembly and reassembly. You clean certain parts and move on. I've never done it before.
So the educational aspect, and I think that's incredibly important. I think you become a better gun owner and a more responsible owner, a more capable, from a defensive standpoint, gun owner, if you understand how your gun works, right? All of a sudden, grip and stance and supporting the operation of the gun become important. So today, I know you're halfway through your build. What are your thoughts right now, halfway through?
An appreciation for how well a manufacturer does at this. But
in some cases, hundreds of thousands of times a year, right?
Right. Now, just seeing where the tolerances are going to be important. I mean, you can kind of tell with what components you're tuning on, roughly what they're going to do. I'm kind of daydreaming about how that's going to function or how many times I'm going to have this apart and be tuning on it.
Right. And then, so this is your first build, but I think you picked up two kits, right?
No, just one.
Just one. Okay. So you are building a Glock handgun. Do you own a Glock handgun or a Glock style handgun yet?
No.
So this is going to be your first polymer gun?
This will be the only handgun that I own right now.
Oh, wow. Very cool. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go back to work then and get this done. Thanks for joining us today.
Appreciate it.
My name is Derek. Today I'm building a Polymer 80 kit build. First time I've ever built that specific kit. I've built one other kit before, an 80% ARMS AR-15 build. Finished it maybe about 6 months ago. So I'm pretty new to this. Find it super interesting and I love it. I'm enjoying it.
Cool. Now, this is your first gun building event with us, right? As far as anything we've done, because this is the second one we've done in Colorado, but you didn't build that other one with us.
No, I built that one on my own.
Okay, because it was about 6 months ago we did the last one. I didn't think you were here, but the handgun, do you own a similar style, like a Glock style polymer framed handgun?
I own a Glock.
Okay, so you've got a Glock. So being a Glock owner, what are your thoughts as you're putting this together?
It's making me understand a lot more of the operation of the firearm, all the parts that are go together to make the firearm actually work. And
so when you do you think then this is one of the themes we've kind of heard again and again already in talking to people that are here today, does this make you a obviously a more educated gun owner, but do you think it actually plays off to make you a better gun owner or more capable shooter?
I think it can definitely potentially maybe with malfunctions, for one, you can understand, just understanding the mechanics behind the firearm, absolutely. And a little more of an appreciation, I'd say, for firearms. So yeah, I could say a better gun owner.
Cool. And then scale of 1 to 10, how mechanical are you like in general life, do you think?
Typically, I would consider myself pretty mechanical, like 8.
Okay. And then for someone who's an 8, yourself, scale of 1 to 10, how difficult is this? Or technical, I guess.
It's not super technical, really. I'd say it's doesn't take a whole lot of skill, but it does take patience, and parts of it can be tedious.
Yeah, right. But as long as, I guess, if you're dedicated to it, like I tend to be kind of hack, you know, at it with a Dremel or a file or something. You saw me slamming under the hammer on there earlier. But you're probably a little bit more meticulous, I think, as a builder than what you saw me doing. But really, that's what it comes down to, right? Like, it's not, you can get away with being sort of less meticulous, but you've got a pride in your build.
Absolutely. Yeah. It just comes down to the individual and what your style is, how you go about things, and it'll probably align with how you go about other things in life. That's how you're going to go about building your own firearm as well.
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts with us here today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rob.
If you want to learn more about participating in a Gun Makers Match event, head over to gunmakersmatch.com. You can also learn more about it through GFENational.com. That's Guns for Everyone National, the nonprofit wing of Guns for Everyone. Thank you for listening to the Rob Pincus podcast. Don't forget, subscribe and share. See you next time.